Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. My answers are posted every week on Mondays, and you can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask me, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Socrates was a brilliant and rational man. Why would he suffer for a crime he did not commit when he had the choice to escape? Well, Socrates gave his answer that he had promised his fellow citizens, the state, to obey the laws that had been passed by the democracy. And he was a consistent Democrat. He will do what the majority says. The hemlock was passed, was ordered legally. It wasn't that he was assassinated. So he was to live by the laws. He had to take the hemlock. Now, of course, from an objectivist point of view, he was entirely wrong. Individuals have rights. Laws are there to protect the individual right. An unjust law, which intended to kill you, which legislates your killing, is certainly wrong and you should run. That's if you're on the premise that there is objective right and wrong and that government must be based on that, not on majority rule. And the good example is that even though Aristotle did not know about individual rights, he was confronted with a similar situation when the Athenians were after him, and he ran. He fled from Athens with the famous statement, "I'm not going to let the Athenians sin twice against philosophy." If reason is man's means of survival, but I, despite valiant efforts, cannot understand certain subjects, such as higher math or physics, doesn't that mean that my reason is limited and to some extent impotent? No, the implication of this question is wrong. Limited? Yes. Everybody's knowledge is limited. Everybody's faculty is limited. A is A. Everything that exists is only what it is and nothing else. Nothing is infinite. But let's say that you mean more specifically, certain fields of knowledge are beyond you. Well, let's see, first of all, find out why. If other people can understand them and you can't, does that necessarily mean your intelligence is at fault? Maybe it's how you were taught. For instance, if you were taught physics today, why in accordance with the crazy theories that permeate the universities, that doesn't mean just because you don't understand them that you don't understand or can't understand physics. Or maybe you don't know how to study. Your epistemology is confused. But anyway, let's say, even when they're properly presented and you have the right method, you just can't think of higher mathematics. So what? It's irrelevant to what you say to man's means of survival, to your means of survival, to the role of reason in your survival. Everyone, even the most intelligent people in the universe, still have to specialize. They have to study certain areas and not others. So the fact that you can only specialize in certain areas rather than others is in no way distinctive to you, even if it's because you're not smart enough, which you'll never establish, to learn others. You are in no way affected. You certainly are smart enough to know what you're doing and to pick out challenging fields to exercise your reason in, so the rest is irrelevant. Now you say, isn't that mean to some extent that my reason is impotent? There is no such thing as being impotent to some extent. Not in sex, not in cognition, not in pregnancy, and not in being dead. You are or you aren't. There's no extent of it. Is it moral for an artist to want to reach the widest audience possible? Certainly. And it is the same for any production, any book offered to the public. I want my book to reach the widest audience possible. If you're offering a book to the general public, obviously you want to reach them. But the question that I think underlies your question, judging by the rest of it, which I'm not reading aloud, is how you achieve universal, wide reach. If you do this by excellence, if you do it in accordance with your principles and maintain your integrity, that's great. But if, as the rest of your questions suggest, you achieve wide reach by taking something good and then deliberately pandering in certain ways, contradicting in certain ways, removing the integrity in certain ways, then I say, certainly that is not moral. And surely if you read The Fountainhead, you understand why that is completely improper. You might be interested in this. There was a Texas oil man once that came to Ayn Rand and said he would give her, I think at that time it was $5 million. Five or ten, I don't remember exactly. But in those days, this was, I think, the 60s, it was a large amount of money. But he wanted her to get a bigger audience for it and not antagonize people by putting some religion into the book. He said, it doesn't have to be a lot, but just enough so people feel comfortable that your book is compatible with religion. Well, of course, she threw his proposal in the wastebasket indignantly. And she said to me, what would be left of The Fountainhead if I did what he said? I have Rourke standing, on the roof of the building, reading Genesis to the country. This would be completely collapse the book. He has no idea of what it is. Now, maybe it would get a bigger audience for a while, but that doesn't make any difference because the book would be devoid then of any meaning. I'll give you another example of that. I see, or used to when I was in that field, a number of different scripts for the Atlas Shrugged movie. And they're all trying to stick something into it that will make it appealing to the audience. And one is worse than the other. But the one I never forgot is they put a totally gratuitous scene in which John Galt, early in the movie, before he'd ever been introduced, but supposedly to be recognized later, John Galt sees a train full of helpless children going off the rails, and he risks his life to save the children and makes some statement about, when you see children like that, you forget everything. They're most important. And then they felt, well, this would be a great scene. It'll show that Galt is altruistic. He's not really all the selfish things that people think later. Well, you can imagine the reception that that book got from me. I don't see how people on the news, this is asked in regard to the Arizona shootings, how these people can blame everyone but the guy with the gun, the guy that actually used force. Well, they have a lot of cover-up bromides, such as, all illogical. A gun means a right-winger holding it. A right-winger is an anti-immigrant, is one who hates. A person who hates generally lives in pejorative states, negative states like Arizona, and therefore, it's the fault of Arizona or the fault of the right everywhere that caused this. Now, you see, all of that is nonsense. It hasn't a moment plausibility, but that's the cover-up. The actual truth is it is ideological propaganda. It is done to spread an ideology, or in this case, to attack an ideology. And a perfect example here is the sentence that that ROM guy, the one that's running for the mayor of Chicago now, let slip, which you should never forget. Never let a crisis go to waste. That is exactly the philosophy of status. They wait for something bad and then they rush in to pursue their agenda. And never forget that statement, because that's the whole key to what these people do practically. And that is exactly what they do. They use it to, they want to advance their anti-Americanism by equating the killer with people who are pro-American. Whereas if somebody on their side does a shooting, such as a countless Muslim terrorists, the only thing you hear is no rush to judgment, trial in New York City, etc. It's such a bizarre double standard and is motivated entirely by ideology. I have to give you one personal example. I was teaching at a college in Denver at the time that JFK was assassinated. And he was assassinated in Dallas, of course, which was thought to be a right-wing bastion. And the chairman of the department said to all of us, including me, that shows you what right-wingers do. This is what all anything we can expect from the right. And of course, I objected. He said, oh, you're a philosopher, but the majority of right-wingers aren't philosophers, they hate, and that's what, he was solid on that. Over the weekend, it was found that Oswald had all these communist and Cuban connections, and he was the opposite of a right-winger. And this man, the chairman of the department, came in on Monday, and he said to me, you know, I've been thinking about this question, and I think it really has no political significance. It's just an accident. It really doesn't show anything one way or the other. And he said it to me as though he's being really fair, because he attacked me for being a rightist and now he's not attacking me, with never even a dream of hinting at maybe he and his fellows are responsible. Just remember, never let a crisis go to waste. That is the explanation of all of it. I often hear and read the term rational egoism from objectivists. Isn't that term redundant? Is there such a thing as irrational egoism? My answer would be, in fact, yes, that is redundant. Rational egoism is redundant. There's no other kind. Irrational egoism is a self-contradiction, because we achieve our self-interest through reason. But we have to communicate with people today. We have to do so in brief terms, in which we can't present a whole philosophy every time. And we do so in a world in which the falsehoods of the issue are everywhere and taken for granted as self-evident. So if everybody believes egoism is a form of unreason, if we're going to be clear in a brief statement, we need the redundancy. In a better world, it would be harmful, because it implies that there's two kinds of egoism. An adjective always implies a possible variety. A red book implies a green or a yellow. If there were only red books, you wouldn't say red book. So if you're in a long discussion and you can define egoism, then you simply say, I am for egoism. But today you have to, and hope that the discussion will make your real meaning clear. And we do that on so many things out of necessity. For example, individual rights. Well, there's no other kind. Laissez-faire capitalism. There's no other kind, etc. But it's a desperate attempt to be clear in a context where communication is totally blurred by falsehoods taken as self-evident. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.